This is Jay Sekulow. This evening, the president addresses the nation, the issue, border security.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Will President Trump be able to sway public opinion on the border wall? That is the question of the day as he gears up to give his first Oval Office address on this growing issue.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I think President Trump is prepared to do what's necessary to address what is a real humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. For the first time on record, the vast majority of those are families, unaccompanied children, and it simply is overwhelming. We need the Congress to come to the table and work with this president to address this crisis once and for all.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, well, the president's going to address the nation tonight. We'll have full analysis of that, obviously, tomorrow. But let me tell you what we look at as what's at play now with this issue of national security at our southern border. There are three code sections that we have analyzed that we think are relevant here. One is, we talked about yesterday, and that is 50 U.S.C. 1621. That is the one that gives the president the authority to declare a national emergency. So that is one that's definitely in play. There's another code section, 10 U.S.C. Section 2808, and it gives the president authority in the event of a national emergency to include construction authority. That would be the building of the security barrier at the southern border. And then Section 33, U.S.C. Section 2293, reprogramming during the national emergencies, and allows for the event of a national emergency for there to be a reallocation of services in force. So here's what you have. I mean, we're looking at the legal issues. I think it's clear that if the president were to make a decision that there was, in fact, a national emergency at play here, that it'll get a challenge. But I just it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, the Ninth Circuit certainly could do this, but I don't think the Supreme Court would, that they would substitute a judge's determination as to whether a national emergency exists rather than the president's. And that's really what it comes down to. At the end of the day, if the president does, in fact, tonight or on Thursday, declare a national emergency, the question is not, should a judge decide that there's a national emergency or not? I mean, that's separation of powers. That's an Article II authority of the president of the United States. And it's a statutory authority also based on a legislation that was passed over a number of years. So that the legal question on, and even the reporters, the news magazines, newspapers are saying that, look, he probably has the authority to do it. The question is, will he? Well, we're going to find that out soon enough. But that's where the legal issue sits.
Absolutely. The legal issue will be, one, I don't think a Ninth Circuit judge is going to follow that advice. They're going to determine on their own, likely, whether there's a national emergency. But when it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court, and certainly in this kind of situation, the legal challenge would make its way because it involves presidential power and the statute in question. It's hard to imagine the Supreme Court deciding their own opinion on what is a national security. Because this is under the same laws of when you should declare war. I mean, that is not the job of any judge or justice of any courts in our country, of any of the federal courts in our country. This is the job of the president of the United States. And I think when he's backed up by the Customs and Border Patrol agents, and when he's backed up by his own Department of Homeland Security, with the facts, with the numbers, for instance, 3,000 special interest aliens were encountered by the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, last year at the southern border. This is getting confused with known or suspected terrorists. Special interest aliens are a step below that. They are non-U.S. persons who, based on an analysis of travel patterns, potentially pose a national security risk to the U.S. Often such individuals and groups are employing travel patterns known or evaluated to possibly have a nexus to terrorism. So just on last year, there were 3,000 of those individuals encountered by, is the word used by DHS, on our southern border. So not all of our borders, not including the airlines, not including the northern border, not including shipping and everything else, just at the southern border, 3,000 who have a possible nexus to terrorism. We're not just talking about migrants here, as we've talked about in the broadcast. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. The president set to make a national address to the nation tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern time, followed by a Democrat response, and then he's heading to the border this week as well. When or it will he declare a national emergency to build this wall? Well, and what will that do to the shutdown? We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the medical board in Ohio. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. Take a listen to Vice President Pence. I think this kind of sums it up when we're talking about the shutdown, the national security aspect, the potential that the president will declare a national emergency, which he can under 10 U.S. Code Section 2808 that provides construction authority in the event of a declaration of a national emergency, that the military may undertake construction projects. It says it in our legal code, 10 U.S.C. Section 2808. Take a listen to Vice President Pence, because the Democrats just don't want to negotiate.
We've been engaged in good faith negotiations, but negotiating is a two-way street. It's time for the Democrats to come back to the table, tell us what they need, tell us what their offer is, and as the president said, we can resolve this issue in a matter of hours.
Again, a matter of hours if the Democrats were negotiating in good faith. I want to take phone calls. Let's go right to them. 1-800-684-3110. Our phone lines, are they ready? Is Bob's call ready? 1-800-684-3110. If not, if Bob is not ready, we will. No, he's not ready yet. We'll get to him soon. Let me go to Harry Hutchison. Harry, the idea, we don't know if it will happen tonight in the president's address to the nation. That is, again, at 9 p.m. Eastern time, and then the Democrats are going to respond. We don't know if it maybe happens Thursday after he visits the border. If the president does declare a national emergency, there's a lot of discussion out there amongst liberal and conservative legal groups. Yeah, there will be a legal challenge. That is no question. But that the president's on pretty firm footing by making this declaration.
I think you're absolutely correct. So there are two precise issues that we have to look at. First, can he invoke his emergency powers? And I think the answer to that particular question is yes. There are 123 provisions, statutory provisions, enabling the president to invoke his emergency powers, at least according to the Brennan Center at NYU. The second question is, can he build the law? And apparently there are at least two, if not more, statutes which would allow a wall to be built. It's important to recognize that in 2006, Congress passed the Secure Fences Act, right, which would enable the president to use military officials to build the wall. And in addition, we have passed legislation which would prevent drug smuggling. And drug smuggling, along with human smuggling, is in many senses the origin of the problem, and the long-term solution beyond a border wall will require deep embedded negotiations with Central American authorities and the elimination of corruption in Central America. But in the short run, the president, I believe, is on firm grounds in terms of invoking his emergency powers.
I think it also would be difficult for a court to substitute its judgment for what's a national emergency as compared with the president. Now, there's been a lot of numbers thrown around over the last couple of days, but let me tell you one number that is now not disputed. And this is coming from DHS. 3,000 special interest aliens were encountered by DHS last year at the southern border. A SIA, special interest alien, are people or individuals or group are employing travel patterns known or evaluated to possibly have a nexus to terrorism. DHS analysis also includes examination of travel patterns, points of origin, or travel segments that are tied to current assessments of national and international threat environments. That is confirmed. That is fact, Wes. So that it gives, again, as the president lays out the case for why this is necessary, it certainly proves that.
Yeah, absolutely. As we've said on this broadcast before, that we have a crisis. We have an emergency on the border. You look at those stats you just shared, Jay. You look at the fact that last year 6,000 MS-13 gang members were apprehended at the southern border. You look at all the unaccompanied minors, the human trafficking, the drug cartels. It is a serious issue. And as we've said before, it's a shame that there's the potential, if we don't secure the southern border, there is the potential for a terrorist attack, a large-scale attack to happen because of that border, and that American citizens will have to die en masse, possibly, in order for Congress to secure the border. They're already dying, Jay, at the rate of about one a week, many of them law enforcement officers.
Saying there's a humanitarian component to this.
Yes, there is.
A humanitarian crisis. Let's go ahead and take a call.
Yeah, Joseph's calling in from Idaho on line 5. Joseph, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Joseph.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you guys. Yeah, my concern is all the Border Patrol agents that have to encounter these kind of people. I mean, they have families, too. And I think Congress needs to do what Trump is petitioning, to have a border wall secure. So not only the people, you got to think people are coming from other countries with their families, their children. And it's not even, if you think about the humans that are the human beings, people and their children are dying in the desert without water, trying to get here through our desert. That's one problem that nobody talks about. And then you have, yes, the terrorist problem. I mean, that's a huge problem.
So I think that if you look at that, this is, again, there's going to be a collective analysis under the facts that the president puts forward tonight justify him declaring a national emergency. And again, I go back to the point, I'm not convinced, Jordan, that the federal judge can substitute his decision for that of the president constitutionally.
No, I think that the only issue really to look at is the statute being utilized correctly. And all that you would look at there is, I think, all these different provisions. I mean, there's so many provisions. One is a construction statute. I mean, 10 U.S.C. Section 2808 says if there is a declaration by the president of a national emergency, the military may undertake construction projects. I mean, it's pretty clear. So, again, I do think that they're going to start this case out in the Ninth Circuit, I'm sure, if they can, against the president's decision. Those judges, I don't think, will have a problem trying to insert their own opinion of whether or not there's a national emergency. But the U.S. Supreme Court, which takes its job extremely seriously and is the final court in the land, will have to really make a decision on this. It'd be hard-pressed to see that there would be five justices willing to second-guess a president's decision to declare a national emergency. This is not trying to use these laws to take over private companies like the Youngstown Steel case and all of that. This is not that. And so I think the president, he's going about it the right way. Addressing the nation, heading to the southern border. And it's also a potential solution. Remember, in the background, this is a potential solution to the shutdown.
So I was going to
because you take that issue out.
So, Than, talk to me about that. I mean, where do you see things right now congressionally?
Well, I think it would be a solution to the shutdown because this has really been the only sticking point from the very beginning, Jay. I mean, remember, the negotiation for the other bills, the non-Department of Homeland Security ones, were essentially done at the end of Congress. They were only taken hostage when this debate over the wall funding cropped up. So if that were taken off the table, I think the government funding shutdown would resolve very quickly. But, Jay, just real quickly, this is such a natural progression tonight for the president to go to the American people because all of those stats that you're talking about, the president and Secretary Nielsen tried to share them in confidence, along with classified information, in the Situation Room with Democrats. Democrats would not listen. So President Trump took that directly to the Hill, sent that slideshow presentation to the Hill, and now, Jay, he's taking it directly to the American people. And the contrast tonight between a president who's trying to secure the border and a leadership in Congress who says not one penny additional new money for border security, Jay, I think the American people are going to respond in a resounding fashion to that.
We want to get your response, 1-800-684-3110. Now, the Democrats are going to be responding tonight as well, immediately following the president. Right now, the press reports are the president's address is not going to be one of those long addresses, but it'll come on right around 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 o'clock if you're out west, 8 o'clock if you're on Central Time, and it'd be about 8 minutes long. So not a really long address, but serious. I mean, this is serious when it comes out of the White House. Then he heads to the southern border on Thursday. We don't know if he's going to announce a national emergency tonight and use the address to do that, or if he's building up to it by using this address. But we also know that the Democrats are going to respond, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. We talked about this in our meeting, Wes. That seems to be very dangerous because the president's ability on camera versus their ability on camera to look like, again, that they are anti-national security. And I think that it's a very dangerous position for these newly empowered Democrats to take.
I think you're exactly right. It would have been the better part of wisdom for them to say nothing after the president and to allow the mainstream media to attack the president, which they are really good at. And that way, Nancy and Chuck would not have to be in front of the cameras. Their likability factors are a little bit low anyway. But if they come off as being anti-national security in light of all the things that are happening, in light of these stats that DHS released today, it's going to put them in a very, very poor light. You mentioned the statute that governs declaring an emergency, Jordan. The thing about this statute is that it is worded very carefully. It states the process by which the president can declare a national emergency. It doesn't define what a national emergency is. That is strictly left up to the president. It would be horrible precedent for a judge to decide that instead of the president.
All right, folks, we come back. We'll be taking more of your phone calls. I know we can take Joanne's call next. So, Joanne, hang on the line. 1-800-684-3110. If you want to talk to us on the air, that's 1-800-684-3110. A lot of information up at ACLJ.org as well. Don't forget our petition on that doctor, Laura Kalab. That petition's up at ACLJ.org. A new Fox News opinion piece went up yesterday. We've got links to that as well at ACLJ.org. But we want to hear from you, either on Facebook and Periscope through your comments or by giving us a call on the show. 1-800-684-3110 as the president prepares to address the nation tonight on a national emergency.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the medical board in Ohio. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can can add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Interesting question on Facebook. Steve wrote in, why does the left not see eye to eye with the president when it comes to national security? You know, it's interesting. When he discusses troop withdrawals, and they've been saying, get out of Iraq, get out of Afghanistan, then the left opposes troop withdrawals. So it's just opposing Trump. I think that just answers that question in general. They will oppose whatever decision he makes, firing Jim Comey. They all wanted Jim Comey out. He fired Jim Comey, so suddenly he's obstructed justice. When it comes to the troop withdrawals, whether it's Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, if he any kind of drawdown, they now disagree with. Now they're the party who wants to occupy and stay with keep these forces in. And to me, it has nothing to do with policy. It's just a opposition to whatever President Trump believes is the right thing to do and the Trump administration believes is the right thing to do. We will oppose Trump. It's not even they don't even do it as oppose Republicans. It's a we will oppose Trump. But let me go right to the phones. Joanne calling in from Houston, Texas, on line 3. Joanne, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Joanne. Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate your show. I just, you know, I'm all 100% in favor for this, for Trump. But I was just wondering, you know, I'm pretty sure that they're going to take it to the Ninth Court of District. And what's going to happen then when it makes its way to the Supreme Court?
In the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, what's going to happen? I can tell you that right now. They'll come up with a way for the president to lose. But these are the steps you have to go through in order to move it forward. So at the Supreme Court, I'm much more confident of a victory. Because, I don't think you could substitute a judge's determination for a national emergency as compared with the president's determination of what's a national emergency. Having said that, the other question there is, and go to Than on this, is what does congressional support look like in a week? Not today. What does it look like in a week or 2 more weeks of a government shutdown?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to say, Jay. I mean, you know, come this Friday, you're going to have federal government employees and their families that do miss paychecks because of the shutdown. That will certainly have an effect. Jay, I think as time goes along, probably support in Washington, D.C. will diminish, even though I think support around the country, Jay, and I think we'll see this tonight when the president speaks, I think will be on the rise. And I would say this, even though I don't think privately there's much dispute in Washington, D.C. about President Trump having this authority to declare a national emergency, I think behind the scenes, even most Democrats concede that he does. It would still be better if Congress would step up and do their job, Jay. And the caller's call points this out. It would not have to go through the protracted process of the federal courts. They would simply allocate the funds because this is a shared duty between the Congress and the president to secure our borders. But, Jay, they've shut their eyes to the real facts on the ground. The Department of Homeland Security did a very good job laying those facts out. And the president's going to put those facts directly in front of the American people. So while support in Washington, D.C. for this negotiation probably will ebb, Jay, I think it's going to sustain among the American people. And that dichotomy it would favor the president.
All right. We've got an opposing call in. Jay calling from North Carolina on line 4. Jay, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hey, Jay. You're on the air.
My comment was that, you know, we started this conversation was opened up and the word terror was used. And the word potential terror attack was used. And I think that's silly to use that type of terminology here because there have been no terror attacks on the border. There have been no mass killings on the border. There have not even been any threats.
But it's not a question of whether there be mass killings on the border. No. I mean, it's whether if you're allowing terrorists into the United States to infiltrate our southern border to then get into a system, Wes. I mean, that's really what it is.
And I don't understand Jay's comment because do you want to wait until there is a mass killing? Is that when we actually
something? We did have a legal immigrant police officer
yes.
killed by an illegal immigrant just days ago.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, that's a terror to that family.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that happened after 9/11 with the 9/11 report, they said that the United States had a failure of imagination. We could not imagine, the report said, the lengths that our enemies would go to launch a mass attack on the continental United States. And I think we're sort of in that same place now. You know, the intransigence of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi is alarming, in my opinion. She said last evening, literally, that there is not one thing that the president can give the Democrats that would change their position. Not one thing?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, it's unbelievable. Last week, the Gallup poll said that the approval rating of Congress was at 18%. When you hear statements like that from Nancy Pelosi, you know why.
I'll tell you something else, though. It's not just terrorism.
No.
It's drug flow. It's sex trafficking.
I mean, MS-13 alone is their own terrorist group.
Is that a national emergency?
Yes. They terrorized their own communities, too. So the Hispanic community here and in Central American community in America has been terrorized by MS-13. I mean, they are brutal in their attacks. And oftentimes, those of us who are not in those communities hear the news reports about it but aren't as affected by it because the attacks are on each other. Here's how we are affected by it, though. You know, we had a caller yesterday whose son was in detox for heroin. These are the groups bringing in the drugs as well. I mean, that's how they fund right. themselves. So whether you're talking about the cartels, which, by the way, are very similar to terrorist organizations, the way that they are run. They have paramilitary groups, terror tunnels to smuggle. I mean, what does that sound like? It sounds exactly like what we're talking about, Israel and Hezbollah and Israel and Hamas. And by the way, Hezbollah works with like the same group that El Chapo's group was working with. The Sinaloa cartel was working with Hezbollah on right. money transfers through Lebanon. I mean, so it's no surprise they use the same tactics, the same travel tactics. So as the DHS said,
6,000 members of MS-13, by the way.
Yeah, six, and then add to that 3,000 special interest aliens. So that's 9,000 people if you include who are a threat to the national security of America. And I believe that those MS-13 members are a threat to all of our national security. They pose extreme violence. We see that every day in communities from all over the country. They're everywhere. But from the Northeast to Southern California and everywhere in between. And then, of course, the drugs that they bring in, which affect all communities in America. And tied to that, these special interest individuals who the media likes to ignore, but the truth is people who pose a potential national security risk to the U.S. because of their patterns of travel and possibly have a nexus to terrorism. And 3,000 of those were encountered by DHS last year at the southern border. Well, that word alone scares me because it means that they weren't all stopped.
Right. So Harry, We may do a policy program on this on ACLJ.org in the next couple of days once we find out exactly what's going to happen. But from a policy perspective, put the legal side situation aside, it seems like the case for a national emergency is there.
Absolutely. And so I think one of the best indicators of that is to look at the individuals who benefit from the current failed policy. It's drug smuggling cartels. It's human smuggling cartels. And I think it's very odd that the Democrats, who claim to be open-minded, their policy is absolutely consistent with that of the drug cartels and the smuggling cartels. They seem blind to the human suffering that is caused by open borders.
All right, folks, we are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. If phone lines are full, you can get your comments in through Facebook and Periscope as well. And a lot of information up at ACLJ.org. Petition on that doctor in Ohio, the anti-Semitic doctor. We are still working aggressively there. We've got our legal team working on that. And a lot of info on what we're doing at the ACLJ is up at ACLJ.org. We're asking you this. Do you support the president in this potential decision to declare a national emergency as we enter day 18 of the shutdown with really no end in sight unless the kind of wall is taken out of the discussion. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
I think President Trump is prepared to do what's necessary to address what is a real humanitarian and security crisis. We need the Congress to come to the table and work with this president to address this crisis once and for all.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
So the president's addressing the country tonight on this issue of border security on our southern border. The issue is the president going to declare a national emergency? By the way, national emergency does not mean a war. I mean, it's not limited to a definition of what is a war. A humanitarian issue at the border, a 6,000 members of MS-13 coming into the United States, 17,000 individuals arrested with criminal records, 3,000 special interest aliens. All of those are could be national emergencies, and certainly MS-13 is, and sex trafficking is. The question is not whether that is a war or not, whether we're having a war. I don't think we need to conflate the two. Some of the media is trying to conflate the two issues, Harry, but they're very separate.
Absolutely. And so in addition to the statistics that we have just gone over, the number of special interest aliens that have entered this country, the number of gang members, it's also important to note that the U.S. system for detaining illegals is unprepared for the change in the composition of those illegals who are crossing the border. In the past decades or so, most of the individuals crossing the border were single adults, often single men. Now you have a large number of families who are crossing the border, and we have insufficient facilities to deal with them. So that alone, in my opinion, constitutes a ground for declaring a national emergency and for the president invoking his national emergency powers. And I think he will set forth the case, hopefully tonight, in support of such a declaration.
So, Jordan, the having Pelosi and Schumer respond, I think, was not a smart move.
I think very dangerous for the Democrats to follow President Trump. He's the commander-in-chief who has all the information to decide if there's a national emergency. And honestly, they just look weak on border security. I mean, what are they gonna, all that they're doing here is saying, we oppose the president being strong on border security. We don't agree with the facts that you got these suspected gang members, MS-13, terrorists coming across, that we don't agree with that. I think, again, like we said, the networks who have professional, basically, anti-Trump hosts and guests on would have done a better job of going against the president in this 8-minute speech than putting up two very unliked individuals nationally. I mean, Nancy Pelosi's national ratings are no better than President Trump's, if probably worse. Congress's ratings are always at the lowest. They're like at 10-12% approval. I mean, they are the cause of the shutdown, let's be honest, because the House and the Senate can't figure it out and get anything to the president's desk. So very dangerous politically. And will they go far enough for their crazy liberal base these days? I mean, there's another point to this, too, is that their base has gotten so far to the left that what are they going to say that's really going to appease them? Oh, just that we're just going to oppose this? Oh, great. So keep the shutdown going so the government workers don't get paid. That doesn't affect, by the way, as many Republicans as it does liberals when it comes to these government workers. We know that the bureaucrats are predominantly Democrats, and that's not who's getting paid under the shutdown.
I will tell you this. I think that the issue we have, Fan, if you're looking at it from a congressional standpoint, is what I said this earlier in the first half hour of the broadcast. What is the Democratic negotiating point here?
Yeah, at this point, they're not willing to negotiate. They have not cooperated.
If they got DACA,
would that
change it? Probably not.
No, that was put on the table last week.
Right.
The White House said they were willing to talk about that, and Democrats said absolutely not. So their goalposts are just changing. But, Jay, I want to say this. Tonight, the president's going to go forward and say, we've got these known or suspected terrorists entering. We've got these special interest aliens entering. Jihadists are encouraging their sympathizers to infiltrate and cross our porous border. And then Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are going to follow up on that and say, not a dollar for border security. Jay, that's a very dangerous political position for them to be.
High risk, no doubt.
Very, very risky, folks. We'll continue to take your phone calls. Take more of those at 1-800-684-3110. And we are going to, again, encourage you to go to aclj.org. Stay activated on our issues. We've got petitions up there as well at aclj.org. When we come back, more of your phone calls as the president prepares to address the nation tonight.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the medical board in Ohio. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
And that went right to the end. Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. If you were just watching on Facebook, we had a nice video there put together for you. It went right to the end of the, I think, with a second to spare. Hey, by the way, let me mention this. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. A friend of mine for many, many years who had a tremendous ministry, his name is Rick Stanley, passed away yesterday. And he was Elvis Presley's stepbrother. A lot of you in churches, I'm sure, have seen his testimony and heard from him. He'd been struggling health-wise for the last couple of years. At the end of the broadcast today for Facebook and Periscope, we're going to have a little tribute for him, for Rick Stanley, really for his family. He led a lot of people to the Lord, and as I said, was a friend of ours for many, many decades. And we've got a tribute that we're going to run at the end of this, so we encourage you to stay tuned for that. I'll probably post that on my Facebook page as well at the end. But Rick Stanley went to be with the Lord yesterday, actually early in the morning, and had a tremendous ministry in the United States and really around the globe. Worked with Billy Graham Evangelistic Association for many years. And was a gifted preacher and evangelist. Anyways, let's go right back to the phones. 1-800-684-3110. Who do we have next?
Yeah, right back to the phones we go. Elaine calling in from Florida on line 6. Elaine, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your program. I really enjoy it.
Thanks, Elaine.
My question is, has any consideration been given to doing or constructing half of the wall, and then we do some observations to see if there's something that we may even need to do in conjunction with doing the other half?
Well, I think you raise a point. I think allocations, Wes, on these kind of resources and locations and what you're going to do, all of that will be considered as the president moves forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And the $5 billion that he's requested is not enough to complete the wall.
Right.
The original asking was for $25 billion. And so, yeah, to the caller's point, though, the Border Patrol, they have several different types of walls that they've been experimenting with.
Right.
One of them's near San Diego. And they say it's 95% effective, that a wall, a barrier really does make a difference. And there are about three different models that any one of those models, Customs Border Patrol said that they would be in favor of.
Harry, so if the president utilizes the three code sections that we analyzed early in the broadcast, which were 50 U.S.C. 1621, Declaration of National Emergency, 10 U.S.C. Section 2808, Construction Authority in the Event of a Declaration of War or National Emergency, and 33 U.S. Code 2293, reprogramming during national emergencies. What do you think? I think that gives him the parameters which to do it. Now, the question is this. If he's going to do this, it's not. It doesn't have to be a $5 billion expenditure at that point, right? It could be the entire cost.
Absolutely.
So you take that off the table in a way.
From what I've gathered, there's something like $20 billion in unallocated funds in the defense budget. And to the extent that he could use those funds that are unallocated, he could virtually complete the building of the wall via emergency powers. And it remains to be seen, we haven't seen the speech, obviously, what he's going to suggest. But obviously, we could move forward fairly expeditiously. And the other advantage is we could do so without congressional restraints. I'm sure that whatever he does, it will likely spark or provoke litigation.
Yeah, no question about
but
that.
But I think that can be dealt with in the courts.
But, Than, on the $25 million, at that point, if you do the national emergency, take it off the table, the president could spend the money necessary to complete the project.
I think he could, and I think most people in Washington, D.C. concede that's the case. Now, of course, it's not ideal to have to go to funds that the Department of Defense could use elsewhere, but look, this is a high priority. I think the information from the Department of Homeland Security confirms that, so I think it would be a very reasonable use of those dollars to do it. And, Jay, just from a political standpoint, it would put the Democrats in the position of needing to open the government back up and maybe restoring some of those funds to the Department of Defense. I would say if the president goes this route, Jay, and I think it would be very reasonable for him to do so, we should continue to call on the United States Congress, both the House and the Senate, to get their act together and do their job, because these are kind of measures that the chief executive of the United States should not have to do. We should have a Congress who is actually committed to securing our borders. At this point, Jay, it's really hard to come to any conclusion, but that we don't have that right now.
Wes, what do you think the reaction of the military would be if that $25 billion, which is let's be realistic. I mean, it's a big number, it sounds like, but for our military budget, it's not.
Right.
What do you think the reaction of you're in touch with military men and women all the time.
They would be supportive of it. My military friends that I talk to see this as a real national security issue. The ones that were deployed to the border, I didn't hear of any of them complaining about being deployed to the border in the latter part of last year. If the president can get past this legal challenge that he's sure to face about declaring an emergency, I was reading through 2808 that you referenced a minute ago. It says, in the event of the declaration of a national emergency, the Secretary of Defense, without regard to any other provision of law, may undertake military construction projects and may authorize those projects to take place, even though not otherwise authorized by law.
Yeah.
So if he can get past the national emergency part, which should be a no-brainer, the rest of the laws related to military construction seem to be very, very clear that he could take Pentagon funds and do this.
Yeah, Harry, I think he wins. I mean, I think the president clearly wins the issue of national emergency, because, again, it's what I said earlier. I don't think a court can substitute its decision for the president. But that does not mean it's not going to be challenged. It's going to be challenged.
Absolutely.
And you'll find some hostile courts.
Yes. And so it will be challenged on grounds of his statutory authority, and it may be challenged in terms of whether or not his proposal is constitutional. And I think the predominant evidence that I've seen so far suggests that most courts would be inclined to agree with the president. And as Than has correctly pointed out, a significant number of Democrats agree with that assessment. In other words, that the president does have statutory and constitutional authority to invoke his emergency powers. And I also think we should point out one other factor, which is we could, in some sense, link the invocation of his emergency powers with respect to the border to the drawdown of military men and women in Afghanistan and Syria, which will indeed, I think, save some money going forward.
I'm sure billions for sure. All right, let's go ahead and take another phone call, 800-684-3110.
Yeah, Bill in Ohio on line 3. Bill, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Bill.
Thank you, gentlemen. My question really is regards the executive orders, and in this case, the evoking emergency power orders. Why couldn't someone withstanding, say, in another geographical area of the country, go to a circuit court that is conservative and has more constitutional judges in their makeup and challenge the decision there, so that that decision then would maybe come out before someone could challenge it in the Ninth?
I think here's the reality. It's a good question, Bill. It's the administration is going to be the defendant,
yeah,
not the plaintiff. I mean, they're not going to seek a declaratory judgment as to the president's authority. because the president, under Article 2 and the statutory and constitutional basis upon which he would operate, would have constitutional authority. So the question will be not whether the president can go what we would call forum shopping or the administration, but rather whether who's going to bring a lawsuit. There will be a lawsuit. It will be filed in the Ninth Circuit, which means somewhere probably in Southern California, and a judge probably will rule against it. The question is not what those district court and court of appeals judges do. The question is what the Supreme Court does.
I think that's correct. I think the caller, though, does raise a very interesting hypothetical, which is someone who actually supports the invocation of emergency powers, a plaintiff, could perhaps initiate litigation in a friendly circuit, but I think that would not stop individuals elsewhere from bringing a lawsuit attacking the invocation of emergency powers. And then you might have a clash of the circuits, but ultimately I think you're absolutely right, Jay. The decision would rest with the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think we go back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Greg in North Carolina on line 2. Greg, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
My call is in reference to the possible court challenges. Well, the court challenges that will be coming if he does this, and a way to defeat those court challenges. And I think the way to do that is we're already in a national emergency. Trump declared one, I think, a year or so ago that we're still in reference to the opioid crisis.
Yes.
And I heard that just the other day that fentanyl, which comes across the southern border, mostly, is the most dangerous drug in America right now.
So I was going to ask, that's a good question. I was going to ask Stan. So the opioid epidemic is an epidemic. It is a national emergency. A lot of it comes in through the southern border. What's the Democratic response to that?
The reason they were silent on that one, Jay, is because the overwhelming majority of the American people insisted on Congress of both parties moving to act on that crisis. And that's why I said that I think tonight, when the president goes before the American people, is the one chance to move Democrats. And it's a long shot because, look, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are playing to their radical base right now. They're not playing to voters in purple states. But if the American people would stand up and speak with a voice as loud as they did on the opioid crisis, that might be the one thing that would move Congress. Because I think at that point, Jay, political careers would be at stake. But this goes back to what Jordan said. This isn't about policy. This isn't about the wall for Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. This is about one person. It's not even about politics. It's about one person. They want to be seen as opposing the president of the United States.
Folks, we continue to take your phone calls. The final segment, that's what we do. We take as many calls as we can, getting different points of view in here on this discussion as the president prepares to address the nation tonight. I mean, this is very key, folks. The presidential address during the shutdown, and then he heads to the border on Thursday. We know a Democrat response will be coming from Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. So a lot to talk about. We come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the Medical Board in Ohio.
Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org.
You got a lot of people that have been holding on. We're going to go right to the phones.
We do.
A couple that have been holding on for 25 minutes. We're going to send them a copy of our book, Undemocratic.
Yeah, so Bill, hang on the line after your question comment. Bill calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Yes, first of all, I want to tell you how much I and how important I think your show is.
Well, thanks, Bill.
And your work is. I follow you very closely. But my suggestion would be for the president to actually have a video screen and show clips of Pelosi and Schumer saying how they support the wall, how they
Wes Smith here, Colonel Smith is here, Bill, shaking his head in agreement. Go ahead, Wes.
Well, and I'm laughing too. That's an excellent idea. I don't think the president will do it, but you know, you look back in 2006, the Congress passed a bill on the Secure Fence Act. In 2013, they appropriated, the Democrats, $40 billion for border security. I think you should play the clips, absolutely.
Then how do they answer that? They say, well, that wasn't for a wall, right?
Well, no, they really can't do it because in their speeches, they say explicitly that. They just try to ignore it, Jay. I mean, it was President Obama, it was Hillary Clinton, it was John Kerry, it was on down the line all the way it goes. But, Jay, you don't even have to reach back that far. I mean, you mentioned DACA just a couple of segments ago. We were talking about a matter of months ago that a legalization for DACA participants is what they wanted. The president offered them well beyond that. He offered them a pathway to citizenship for DACA participants and those who are DACA eligible. They said that was a non-starter. So changing their positions has really become standard operating procedure.
All right, let's go right back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. And the president did tweet those videos, by the way. He has tweeted those out from Barack Obama, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton. And, of course, there was the vote on the Secure Fence Act of 2006 that many of these congressmen and senators voted yes on the Democrat side. And Mick Mulvaney has pointed that out as well. Back to the phones we go. Katie's been holding on, too. So, Katie, after you're on the air, hang on, and we'll get you the book. Katie, from Maryland, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, and hey, thank Katie. You so much for that sure. book. I look forward to reading it.
Yep.
Guys, I just want to know why. Why the absolute refusal to this? Why with success rates of 95% on stopping drug trafficking, stopping sex trafficking, trying to stop more terrorists from coming in? Why? Why the absolute refusal?
It's pure, Katie, it's pure. I'll let Harry address it because it's a policy issue, but it is pure politics being played here. Don't kid yourself for a moment. This is not about the $25 billion. It's about politics.
And you're absolutely right. And the caller raises a fantastic point. It's important to note, for instance, that last year, the United States government apparently apprehended sufficient opioids, for instance, to kill every man, woman, and child in the United States. The Democrats are prepared to ignore that. They are prepared to ignore the risk of terrorism. They're prepared to ignore drug smuggling and human smuggling. They are prepared to ignore the fact that our policy in not securing the border actually enhances corruption in Central America, which leads to more problems down the road. So it's not about the politics. It's really about opposing Donald Trump. It's not about the policy. It's Donald Trump. That is the answer to the caller's question.
Back to the phones we go. Lila in New Jersey on line four. Lila, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Lila.
Hey, the debates I'm having, right to left, wrong or right, I don't know. Debates are usually who's breaking the law? What's an asylum seeker? What is the law for asylum seekers? Are they coming from Mexico? Are they coming from three countries removed? Is there a distinction in the law? Because our media keeps sensationalizing the separation of children from parents who are not breaking the law.
Well, okay, so if you're an asylum seeker, you can approach a border and declare asylum. You can then be detained. So you don't have to be let go. You can be detained so long as your hearing is underway. First, you meet with an officer then you potentially you have an appeals process that goes all the way up through asylum courts, which are separate from immigration courts. You have to document why you're seeking asylum. It cannot be for economic reasons. So being poor or being coming from a country with a bad economy is not a reason. You're immediately tossed out for that. It has to be that your life is in danger on a specific grounds because of your religion, because of your nationality, because of your associations. So if a gang is after your family, that right. kind of thing. And you cannot – it also – there's this provision under international law that you declare asylum at the first place you're safe. So that if you've traveled through four countries and in one of those countries, you would have been okay. You would have gotten away from the imminent, yeah. You would have gotten away from the imminent danger if you stopped in that country. Then that is where you had to declare asylum. So if you took a flight, that's one thing because you can't declare asylum in the air. But if you in a different country, but if you're literally walking as some of these individuals are, and let's say the threat to you is in Honduras and in Mexico that threat doesn't exist, well then you need to declare asylum in Mexico. I mean, that's just the truth. Even though economically it may not be the best place, that is where you should be declaring asylum. If your life is no longer in danger, asylum is about your actual livelihood, your actual life being at risk, and that's it.
And Jordan's done work on asylum, representing asylum seekers, and has a master's of law from it at Georgetown. All right, let's grab another call here.
Yep, back to the phones we go. Brenda in New York on line six. Brenda, welcome to JSEC Your Life.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Jay, and all the panel. Thank you for letting me say a few words. I'm calling in regards to, I would like to know why and how Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, why do they have so much say over us?
Well, they control the House of Representatives, Stan. That's the reason right now.
They control the House of Representatives. Under current rules in the United States Senate, you also need at least seven Democrats to push something off the Senate floor. The good news is they also need President Trump. So look, those are the three main players right now. Some people out there might not like it, but that's our way of government. You have to move a funding bill through the House of Representatives, controlled by the Democrats, through the United States Senate, controlled by Republicans, but requiring 60 votes to overcome a filibuster and then be signed by the president. That, Jay, is why Leader McConnell has said, look, the President Trump and Nancy Pelosi have to come to an agreement before the United States Senate is going to take up any of these bills. That's the way out of this impasse.
No question about it. We can grab another one.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Chris in Nevada, line three. Chris, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Hey, Chris. Hi. I actually think there's a blessing in the Democrats challenging President Trump in court, because once the Supreme Court agrees he has these powers, it will actually strengthen his presidency going forward.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. So, again, Harry, I don't think they can substitute, a judge can substitute his opinion on what's a national emergency for the president's constitutionally. I don't think he can do it.
I think you're absolutely correct, and I think the caller has a very good point that after the Supreme Court rules, and more likely than not, they will rule in favor of President Trump, then the president will have extensive discretion, and he will have a constitutional backing supporting his powers, and I think that would be good for the United States.
All right, the president's speaking tonight. Dan, give me a 15-second. What do you expect?
I think he's going to reiterate his need for border security. He's going to insist on getting it. And, Jay, I think he's going to tell the American people that the best way to do it is through Congress, but if they don't cooperate, he's still committed to getting it done, and I think that will be an implication that he's going to use these powers.
I think that's probably right. We're going to know tomorrow, so we'll have more analysis on that tomorrow. George Jordan will be tweeting some tonight as the president makes a speech. Hey, coming up for Facebook and Periscope, a very good friend of ours just passed away. Tremendous evangelist named Rick Stanley. He was the stepbrother of Elvis Presley. We've got a tribute coming to him up right after we go off air for radio and TV. So if you're watching us on other venues on radio, switch over to Facebook. I want you to see this. I'll post this also to my Facebook page later today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org.